When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
In sports, if you want to be the best, there are no off days.
Welcome on in to the No Off Days podcast. Chris Cato wearing his Masters green Pearl Jam shirt. Scott Smith, we got BK in the booth. Congratulations, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I know we're going to talk about it at the end of the show, how much you know, you had the right guy, you picked the winner, but...
you guys let me pick the winner,
right
but thank
out of the
you.
Game, yeah. Well, yeah. Congratulations.
I thought you were congratulating me because Pearl Jam's new album comes out on Friday.
Oh, what's the name of it?
Dark Matter, the 12th studio album.
Have you pre-purchased it?
Yes, I'm lined up. I have two songs downloaded already. I think it's going to be great.
Okay, I got to find a Tower Records near me. I got to go get me that CD.
Yeah.
For sure. So this week, it just kind of feels a little bit different on the show because we've been doing, you know, the cake bracket for the last month.
And it sustained us.
What are we going to talk about today?
I don't know, but I'm already going through sugar withdrawal. Yeah. I can tell you that. We ate a lot of cake.
I have heard a lot of people, actually, some feedback in some of the recent episodes that they were really annoyed by the amount of cake chomping that they could hear, just our podcast listening crowd. And they just thought it was very inconsiterate, you know?
I thought people liked that. ASMR? Yeah, I thought they... Maybe I should smack less.
Well, you know what? Just to scratch that itch, you know, we are going to we're gonna do it yet again.
Really?
I have been told, Chris, I have been told that we are in for a surprise on today's show. That's all I know. And it looks like that surprise is coming out of door number two. Literally, we got Ron Mullen.
Wait a minute.
Hey, Ron, you're supposed to be in the audio booth right now.
Yeah, I should.
How's that? Okay.
What is this?
What do you? I was told this is a cake.
Yes, it is. It's a cakelet, cat litter cake.
A cat litter. Okay, so
that is disgusting.
Our audio audience. Well, it's a litter box.
It is,
and it looks like cat turds.
There are
mixed
there.
Among. But you're telling tootsie me that rolls. This is all edible.
It is absolutely.
Those do not look like Tootsie Rolls.
Okay. You're wanting us to sample this?
I would like you to sample.
Okay. That must be why there's cake bowls right next to you. Reach down, Chris.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Okay. Do you serve it up with the that litter spoon?
I do.
For our audio audience, he has a litter scooper here.
Now, is this
a used spoon?
No.
You can tell it's like crumbled cookie that's like the litter effect. It kind of looks like refried beans. Is that refried beans inside there?
Okay. No, it is chocolate.
Oh, that looks like real litter. That is. Oh.
Okay.
Where's your?
Here,
this is
gotcha.
Fantastic. Now, okay. Ron just he is you kind of bake on the side, right?
I do a little bit.
Whenever we have like we have a little like celebration here in the newsroom, Ron is known to bring, and it's always kind of like a funny like a gag type of
gag cake. Yeah.
Well, he bakes and he cat sits and sometimes combines the two.
All right.
I'll let Scott get in there first. How long have you been making this kitty litter cake?
This is like the third time I've made it.
Third one. Okay, so this should be good by now.
It tastes like Friskies.
Yeah.
Wait, is that catnip?
Yes.
You know, it's not bad.
Right,
it's
let me try this.
It's kind of like I'm trying to even I can't even describe the flavor to you. There's a little bit of obviously there's Oreo.
Oreo, white Oreos, yes.
Okay. But it's like kind of mushed together. There's no like distinct like frosting cake boundaries.
No.
Like they've all kind of been mushed together.
There's a little, it almost has a chocolate pudding with vanilla wafer feel to me. A little bit of that
in there.
It's
actually vanilla pudding with chocolate cake crumbled.
Right. You know, it's actually pretty good. It seems light.
Not bad, Ron.
Yes.
I mean, of all the things I've eaten out of a litter box, this is probably the best.
Maybe. That's not bad.
Yeah, you should have entered
this. I mean, the presentation is a little bit off-putting.
Well,
but once you get past these Tootsie Rolls that look like wet cat turds,
you
know, it's not bad.
Yeah, I'd say the clumping agent in that litter didn't do its job for those T's on top there.
What's amazing is that it not only looks like a litter box, it also smells like one, too. It's the full effect, but it tastes great. Chocolate.
How did you odorize it like this, Ron?
How about that?
A lot of work.
Well, thank you.
What?
You know, I don't know how far this would have gone in the cake bracket.
It would have been fruitcake.
You think so?
Yeah. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You should enter this next year.
I wanted to enter it this year, but I got too late.
Yeah. Well, it takes a while. You need a lot of cats to make this cake.
Well, and it would take a process. You got to educate the audience about what exactly a kitty litter box
cake
is.
It would never fit on the board with all the other ones.
Yeah. Well, very, very well done. Let's give it up for
Ron. All right, Ron, you came through, buddy. Hey, I do want the video, though, of you scratching after you've used the bathroom in this box and covering up your scat. That video's got to be there somewhere.
All right.
Now, leave it here, or you want me to take it with
you? Yeah, why don't you take it back to the crew in the back as you return to your audio booth dwelling. Board. Yes, very good. Thank you
really
very much, Ron Mullen.
What a nice surprise.
So that keeps the streak going. Mm-hmm. That is, I believe, now four straight shows.
Oh, I got a tissue roll.
really. Did he have to run those together? He did that.
He didn't melt this one enough.
No. Okay. Well, while you're chewing on that, let's bring in Brian King. BK.
Man.
I understand the kitty litter cake is on its way to you now.
Ooh,
so get ready.
Wait.
You'll smell it before you see it.
Cannot wait.
Yeah, it's surprisingly good.
Is that what we started now? We're going to have cake cameos each week?
Yeah, well, you know, Ron wasn't scheduled to be part of the show, but he baked his way in, and that's, I appreciate the ambition.
He's talked a lot about it, so I'm glad he came through, and you guys got to experience it.
Yeah. Yep, still chewing over here.
you'll have to nibble on these friskies here pretty soon.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right, so what do we have on the show other than cake, or is this it?
This
are we
it. We're
wrapping up
from here.
Are we wrapping up?
Okay. We're going to talk NFL draft. Our friend Trevor Sikkema is going to join us.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like this NFL, they've got it down. It's one continuous season all year. One thing. It runs into another. Well, we got the draft coming up, so we got to talk to him, get his thoughts on not just the Bucs, but the rest of the NFC South.
Chris, I know you're excited because this is like the mesh point. You're such a big college football fan.
Yeah.
And all that useless information that kind of clangs around upstairs now you get to share it with the world as you kind of make the segue into the NFL season. So is this year's draft class more exciting? Is it always about the same?
Mm-mm.
Is it up, down?
Not always about the same. No. And I was going to bring this up with Trevor, and I will. Better draft class this year than last year. I think much better. Deeper, especially in offensive tackle and cornerback position. Quarterback, yes, deeper, but cornerback, offensive tackle. I think it's a rich draft class.
All right. Well, we'll see what the professional says about that. Trevor, he actually joined us last year and previewed the draft, and I don't remember a single pick that he made, but I'm sure they were correct.
I think he got Bryce Young right.
Okay,
at one.
Well, there you go.
He's blown up now. I don't know if you guys – this is a big get because I think
really
we launched his career last year when he was on the Nod Pod.
Yeah,
and now I hear him. I heard him on Rich Eisen. I heard him on some other national show. I mean, he is the lead analyst, the lead draft analyst for Pro Football Focus.
Yeah,
so
I think we should get some credit for that.
I do,
maybe we can get that.
We'll
out
give
of him
some
today.
Kitty litter cake.
Okay, that we can package that and send it up to him. All right, very good. And then at the end of the show,
we
kind of talked about the fact that our friend here won the Masters via Scottie Scheffler, but we now have to pay our debt, right?
To the victor goes the spoils. Cato gets his dinner.
My Masters dinner.
We'll remind everybody what he got or what he would have requested for his champion's dinner.
Okay.
I hope I get the Duroc bone-in pork chop.
Well,
that was
my
main request
there. Ron's cooking it right now, so whatever he comes up with.
All right. So more eating. Yeah. More eating will happen on this show
later.
It'll
look like a cow pie. That's what it'll look like. Whatever it is. Right. Very good, BK. We'll catch up
in just
a little bit. If you're listening and you want to watch, go to fox13news.com/nodpod. If you're watching and you want to listen or subscribe, take out your phone. You can zap that QR code on the screen. And there you can find all of our shows. Subscribe at fox13news.com/nodpod. So Scottie Scheffler just dominates this thing. And you could kind of feel like once he grabbed the lead away from DeChambeau, it just felt like he wasn't going to let it go. I mean, this guy is so – obviously, he's the number one golfer in the world, but he's just unflappable. I mean, there's nothing that gets to him. And you saw on Sunday, I mean, at one point, I believe there was a four-way tie for the lead. And then the other three guys, like within the span of 15 minutes, they all double bogeyed.
Yeah.
And it was like – oh, it's done. I mean, Scheffler is not giving this up. But his just the patience in the moment, nothing. He just doesn't seem like he's fazed by the fact that this is a Master Sunday. Yes, he's been there before, but I think it's just part of his temperament and part of what makes him so good. So 11 under, wins by four. And that is now nine tourney wins in what? This year? Is that this year? 9 tournament wins. No, that can't be right.
9 in his last 52 starts, okay, which is incredible.
Because I believe he has a dozen overall.
Right.
But he has 3 in the last 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. So, and his earnings for 2024 have already exceeded $15 million.
Oh,
so
wow.
he pocketed 3.5 at Augusta, the Arnold Palmer Invitational. He had $4 million, 4.5 at the Players. So, I mean, he is just on a roll right now. And you kind of wonder, like, what is the ceiling for Scottie Scheffler? 27 years old. Now he has 2 majors, 2 green jackets. Is he a career Grand Slam? I think that's a low enough bar for him. Could it be a year? Like, one in a year? I mean, is this the year, right? You kind of start it with the Masters and see where it goes from here. But, I look at like guys like that kind of had this prowess. They were world number one, won majors earlier in their career. You know, a guy like a Rory, but then he hits like this plateau. You know, like a Dustin Johnson. He's kind of slid back.
Jordan Spieth disappeared.
Like, is that the trajectory for Scottie Scheffler? Which is not to. That's they've had great professional careers, you know, but like. Or are we witnessing something more? I know the game is dying for somebody that could even just have a bit of what Tiger Woods brought to golf.
Yeah.
Is Scottie Scheffler that guy? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's too early to tell. I think what you pointed out there is valid, that he is off to the kind of start that Rory, that Spieth, I think Justin Thomas at one point we thought he could be that. I think what may separate Scottie, though, and put him into that upper echelon, the highest echelon, is his complete command of the mental aspect of this. As you said, he just doesn't get fazed. He bogeyed one hole on Sunday and then comes back with 3 straight birdies. Every time there was a player that was at Oberg, the Swedish golfer?
Ludvig
made a run, right? Yeah. And was kind of creeping up there, one stroke back. Ludvig makes a great shot. Scottie makes it. He had an answer for everything, and then of course when they kind of made that turn into Amen Corner and some of those guys just kind of fell apart there, he takes off with it. He just right now is so level-headed, right? And I think still competitive, but he doesn't ever let the moment get bigger than him. He just walks with his head down. May not be the most interesting guy. That's why I think it's hard to duplicate what Tiger is to golf. I don't know that Scottie's personality is there, but I think at age 27, you know, it is completely possible to get the Grand Slam, and we could be seeing the beginning of domination. Like one of those guys, Tiger-esque, where if other players see his name near the top of the leaderboard, they kind of crumble. They're like, well, we're Scottie's making a run.
He's
so,
a closer.
So we're going to – he's a closer. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I don't think golf necessarily demands big personalities. I really don't think Tiger Woods was ever a big personality. I mean, he was just
a kind of a swagger to him, you know,
certainly
fist
had,
pumping
had,
and that kind of thing. And
he certainly had that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's exciting to see, and I'll if ever there is a Masters draft again, and Scottie Scheffler is sitting there, I will take him.
Yeah.
I will take him. I have learned my lesson. My guy Xander Schauffele got smoked. So, and you know what? It's good to be Scottie Scheffler, and it's good to be Scottie Scheffler's caddy. Ted Scott, have you seen what his earnings are already this year?
I don't know. I gotta imagine it's pretty good.
So we got three wins in the books, $1.2 million.
That's the caddy. The caddy's pocketed.
The caddy. He has earned more money this year than Rory McIlroy as a player. Like, how crazy is that? I guess the cut is 10%. So
he gets 10% of the winnings.
Yeah. He won, then that would be $400,000. At the Arnold Palmer Invitational, then $450,000, I think, that at the Players, and then $360,000 at the Masters. That's incredible. And this guy, I mean, I don't know if you know much about caddies, but this guy's been around for a long time, and he's considered, of course, one of the best in the game. But he also was on the bag for Bubba Watson when Watson won a couple at the Masters.
Oh, so he's the secret sauce.
So he is. That's
So
you got to pay
him
handsome.
When we do our Masters pool, let's find out who Ted Scott's caddying for.
Well,
probably Scotty, right?
If he's smart, he's not going to leave. But yeah, that's impressive. I mean, if you could, I mean, just to be to kind of ride co-pilot. Not to sell what they do short. It's important. I mean, you're getting reads. You're getting, like, I mean, you are essentially kind of like a
navigator,
a coach. But you're also like, you know, like what's the word? Like somebody that keeps you level, right? Like it's not just like, hey, this is the club you should use. This is the distance. This is what I got. What do you think about this approach? Like it is that, but a lot of these players, they already know all of that stuff. It's like the guy that's like in your corner to keep you calm, to keep you cool. And there's got to be something to it. I mean, yeah. Maybe he doesn't have to work that hard with Scotty, but maybe Scotty would be a nervous wreck if it wasn't for him. So who knows?
Yeah, I don't know.
They certainly make a great team. So do you think we've seen the end of Tiger in terms of contention? I felt like the way he just fizzled on Saturday was
– It was tough to watch. You know, first of all, cool that he made the cut, right? Like that's
– Oh, for sure.
That was great to see. But I do think that playing that – what it ended up being, he played 15 holes on Friday to make, you know, they had to continue because of the delay on Thursday. And so I think that, you know, 23 holes on Friday just took it all out of him.
Yeah.
And it was, I was wondering, I thought he was going to withdraw at one point. He just looked physically miserable.
Yeah.
He's pouring sweat, kind of laboring around. And it's, you know, kudos to him for finishing, but he finishes dead last. And you know, it's not how we want to remember or see Tiger.
Of those that made the cut, yeah.
Of those that made the cut, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is. And look, Augusta National is a bear to walk. I mean, that is a long course. And,
which is funny because on TV you don't appreciate the elevation,
right?
Do you? Yeah,
no, you don't. And so for what Tiger has gone through and the many ailments that he's been fighting through, like, you're right. And I think he put on a good face, you know. And if it weren't for a lot of these things, the fatigue factor, I kind of wonder what he would do. Because, I mean, you saw him the first 2 days. I'm like, all right, Tiger's making some shots. I mean, you could tell, you know, even kind of had a little hitch in his giddy up that you're like, oh, boy, you know, this might be tough come Saturday or Sunday. But, yeah, I mean, it's disappointing. You kind of never want to see, like, legends like that kind of fade. And hopefully he can get his body work out, and you know, at some point he gets win number 83. And you know,
what do you think does he only play in the majors from here on out? Is that kind of what we're looking at here?
I think it'll be a select events. It won't just, I don't think it'll only be majors, but I think that those are obviously the big ones, and maybe a couple more. So I don't know. Yeah.
Did you see who did gut it out? Also through some excruciating pain and finished shooting an even 72 on Sunday was a former Masters champion, Jose Maria Olazabal.
Olazabal.
Okay, that was, I knew you'd get that for me. But basically, like, slipped a disc in his back on 13 on Sunday and was, he was dying. He was bending over. He had to change his swing just to swing the club. Like he couldn't do like a full swing anymore. He's like laboring. He's like using, as he's on the putting green, he's using his putter as a cane to bend down and get his ball. And he made it. He pushed through and shot a 72.
Yeah,
that's gutsy.
It's Iron Man golf out there, buddy.
I guess it is.
Yeah.
Tougher guys than I am. But
for sure. All right. So in the world of college football this week, the Michigan probation, at least part of it, has come down. So the defending national champions, obviously a lot of change here in the offseason. Coach and players. But now, of course, there is these probation fines, recruiting violations that were handed down earlier this week. You know, you wonder, it doesn't, on its face, I know we're not fully through with it, but this, a lot of this stuff had to do with some recruiting contacts that were made during, like, the pandemic dead period, and, like, there was impermissible tryouts and different things that took place. And so these are probation's penalties that are levied for that time, and so maybe, you know, the whole gamut has not been handed out yet. We don't know what's going to happen with Harbaugh too, from an individual standpoint. But how much does this impact the defending national champs? I mean, in the world of transfer portal, NIL, like, does this, you know, I don't know what the recruiting restrictions are going
to
be.
Yeah, that's what I'd like to know more about. What are these recruiting penalties? I mean, are you saying that maybe it limits the number of on-campus visits you can have from recruits, or limits the number of coaches you can send out into the field to recruit? But again, in the world of NIL, I don't know that on-campus visits are that important anymore. It's more about, hey, how much money do you have for me? And, you know, I can tell you that dollar figure through a text or over the phone. I believe, you know, it could handcuff the new regime as Sharon Moore was promoted. He was Harbaugh's offensive coordinator, and he is now head coach. So, you know, I think that Harbaugh did kind of leave him, you know, holding a bit of a bag there, but also Sharon Moore was one of the coaches implicated in some of this recruiting violation stuff here.
But if you're another college that is recruiting the same guy, you're saying, look, I mean, are you going to wait around for the next shoe to drop, what that next penalty might be? I mean, like all things.
Oh, yeah, you can use this as anti and, you know, as mirror as what am I saying? Negative material in recruiting. You certainly can.
Yeah, meanwhile, you have Jim Harbaugh that he's living his best life.
Yeah,
right
he
now.
He I left mean, he left Michigan with that dumpster fire, and now
he's living in an RV in Southern California. I mean, life is good for Harbaugh. He's actually living in an RV. Did you know that?
I saw the video. It made me miss Jim. I that's why I hate that he left college football, because I just like his weirdness. I thought it was great for college football. Now he's the NFL's weirdo again.
Yeah, he's bringing that weirdness to the NFL. And in fact, so I'm not sure exactly where the RV is placed.
Huntington Beach.
Okay.
So pretty expensive spot to live. So probably good to have an RV there.
Yeah, maybe he's trying to save a couple dollars until they can afford to buy a play. They're saving up right now, you know. So he's got and then Greg Roman, one of his coordinators, is living with him
in a much bigger RV.
In a different RV, but it's just – he said that this was like a lifestyle thing that he'd always dreamt about, like that there would be an opportunity for him to go do the RV life. And now this is kind of bizarrely the opportunity for that to happen. So he's just living solo. His family's not with him.
You know, this guy always has another angle, though. Like, you're thinking, what's his angle here? Is he avoiding taxes somehow? Is he?
I don't think that there's he doesn't have a physical address, so the NCAA can't track him down. Right?
If I'm a Chargers fan, though, I'm loving this because I think he's probably just sitting in that RV, dreaming up schemes and grinding up. We did see he showed his DVD collection in the RV, and what was it? It was
DVD collection.
DVDs. The Rockford Files, which I don't know. I've never watched.
Yeah.
Ted Lasso. I think I'm the only person who hasn't watched that. And Curb Your Enthusiasm. So, you know, I think once he gets through those, he'll be studying some NFL defense film. And
if he has time.
Plugging in there. Right. The best thing he said in that video I watched was he and Greg Roman are sitting outside, you know, their RVs like a couple of tailgaters and folding chairs with, you know, beverages in their hand, and they're just chatting it up. And he said, Harbaugh says, there's one thing I know, winning has cured more ills than penicillin. That's a scientific fact. Winning has cured more ills than penicillin.
Well, I mean, that is quintessential Jim Harbaugh.
But there's truth in that too,
little tongue in cheek, but yeah, for sure.
I'm gonna miss him for college football. Right, I just you know, that's what stings about this.
Yeah,
I think
Michigan's gonna miss him too.
Yeah,
for sure. And then real quick, you see Ole Miss's spring football game? Like,
I saw some bits on social media.
There was no game. They decided they play seven flag football. I mean, this was basically the Pro Bowl.
They called it the Grove Bowl because it played in the Grove Bowl games.
But it was a hot dog eating competition. Joey Chestnut.
Your hero, Joey Chestnut.
He was out there choking on Frankfurters to impress all the football players. And then they had a tug of war competition.
There's a
slam dunk battle. Yeah. What? I mean,
a dunk contest.
Is this, is he just thumbing his nose at those that put some serious stock into spring football? Because,
you know,
every coach you hear, if you talk about spring football, hey, every opportunity we have to get on the field.
It's another practice.
Right.
It's a scrimmage. Yeah.
And here's Lane Kiffin say, we're going to do a tug of war competition. We're going to have a hot dog eating competition.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I don't mind it at all. And I like Lane, so there's that. You know, I think his tactics are intended to get a response, to get a little bit of extra publicity. Mm-hmm. But I also don't think spring football is really the end-all be-all. Not at this point. Maybe the practices, the game itself, you kind of
– everything's vanilla. The offense isn't running like their real offense. The defense is vanilla. So, yeah, to that point, spring football, these scrimmages. But as a fan, I love watching my offense play my defense and see how some of these new names that have come along. Yeah. So I do, in that sense, I think I would feel cheated if I were an Ole Miss fan. But here's the smart thing in it, I think, and maybe this is what is the kind of the weird genius in Lane Kiffin's mind, is you know what's happening now this week as we tape this. So right after these spring football games, the transfer portal opened again. Mm. And I think in the back of his mind, you know, what happens when you put out a depth chart and you show a roster and you start showing your players how much playing time they may get?
They want to leave.
They get nervous.
Yeah.
They're not, oh, I'm third string running back. Hmm. So he doesn't have to deal with that. You know, so that could be one tactic there. And the other is obviously you're not risking injury. And I think Lane knows he's going to have a pretty good team this year.
Yeah.
You know, so he's not giving. And he even said that. He said, I'm glad these other schools are playing their spring games. Put more tape out there for me.
Yeah. Either way, people are talking about Ole Miss.
Olane. So, yeah.
Yeah. Olane.
Joey Chestnut, by the way, let's see what he ended with here. 90 hot dogs in, was
in
it 90?
14 seconds.
14 seconds. Anyway, he did get choked on a bun. Okay. He's kind of in his out of season mode now.
I mean, can you just hire like a competitive eater like that? Like, hey, come in, you know.
I guess if you're Lane Kiffin, you can.
Can you just come in and do a showcase for us?
Lane slid into his DMs, and that's how he got him to come there.
Hey. Well, very good.
Okay, I got it.
You got
20 hot dogs in 90 seconds. 20 and 90.
20 and 90.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I can do about five.
Another bowl of this kitty litter cake.
No, I'm good.
Okay.
No, but it was great, Ron. Thank you. All right. Coming up on the other side, it's time to talk NFL draft. And for that, we welcome in Trevor Sikkema from PFF.
All right.
He will join us next to go into all the minutia that is the upcoming draft. Stay with us. Well, if you want to talk NFL draft, I can't think of a sharper NFL draft analyst than PFF lead draft analyst Trevor Sikkema. Also happens to be a Tampa Bay native. He's joining us on the program right now, Chris. Trevor, welcome on in. Hey, good to see you. This is year two for you with us. I feel like last time we talked to you, you were not that you were our best kept secret, but like now you're like blown up. You're like national. I saw you on Rich Eisen and you're everywhere. I mean, this guy, do you need an agent? I'm surprised we got you.
No, I appreciate y'all having me. I was talking with you guys a little bit before. Like, this is the fun part, right? I mean, like, you watch the players, you get the opinions, you have the evaluation, and then you got to talk about them places. And, you know, I love to hear myself talk. So I'm in the right business, I guess, and I'm in the right place here to talk about some NFL draft prospects.
We're all going to battle for that, right?
Oh, boy. How does one become a draft analyst? Is this something like a young Trevor put his mind to when he was growing up a football fan? Or is this something you just kind of stumbled into?
No, 100% it is. You know, I grew up in Bradenton, Florida, just south of the Tampa area. And, you know, outside of the Super Bowl years that we had in, you know, around 2002, 2003, some good stretches of play around those years, it's the time being a Bucs fan, you kind of hope for the offseason, right? You wonder what the draft's going to be like, who you get on your team, who could be a major difference maker. And so I'm going to be honest, you know, when I was going through high school and college and all that, like, I was just so into the NFL draft because of that reason. I wanted to figure out how my favorite team was going to get better. As the more I did it, the more I got fascinated with the stories and, you know, how these guys go from being college football players to pros, you know, what it takes to succeed at every single position. And it's just something that I love to do. I loved the draft every single year. Watched it religiously, the combine as well, Senior Bowl coverage, Shrine Bowl coverage, as those kind of ramped up. And, you know, as I went through, I went to the University of Florida and I went through their broadcast program. And that was a way for me to just kind of continually write. You know, I went through that broadcast program and there were ways to kind of do hands-on stuff, little internships, but I was always the most passionate about writing for the NFL. And so I would do that in my free time. And then I ended up doing that freelance and internships after college and ended up landing a great gig at PewterReport.com with still one of the best bosses I've ever had in Scott Reynolds, and getting to cover that team and getting to cover the draft with him was a lot of fun. Went over the draft network. Now I'm here at PFF, and genuinely, having this lead draft analyst title for PFF is it's a dream come true, and I love to do this job. I really do.
So you take mocks very seriously, as do I, and not that I do one of my own, but I take yours very seriously. And so when I'm reading it, I got to be honest, Trevor, I'm a little surprised. See, you got Caleb Williams going number one overall.
Yeah, who is this guy?
My goodness. So, obviously everybody knows it's him, right? So, and then, no secret here. And everybody's expecting a generational talent. So let's just say that that's kind of baked into the cake. What is Trevor Sikkema's number one concern when it comes to Caleb Williams?
Well, I think that playing in structure is something that he still has to do better. Now, I will say this, the reason why he is number one overall on my, why I think he's the consensus number one overall pick in this draft is because, I think that he doesn't get enough credit for the processor that he is within structure. Like, are there times when, hey, you got to hone it in a little bit. You can't be just giving the ball away. You can't be making these kind of boneheaded throws. You can't put the football in danger as much as you did at the college level, at the NFL level. You're just going to have so many different turnovers. Yeah, a lot of those things have to get better. But I will say, too, like, he doesn't get enough credit for the type of processor that he is when he is in structure. When I think a lot of people like to look at that time to throw number for Caleb Williams because it's astronomically high. It's well over 3 seconds. I believe it's an average of 3.25 seconds that he is holding onto the ball, that time to throw. And you go, whoa, there's nobody at the NFL outside of Lamar Jackson that's really doing that at a high level. Anybody that has over 3 seconds of time to throw, how long you hold onto the ball in the pocket, that's normally a sign of you don't really know where to go with the ball. You don't really know how to get it out of your hands quick enough. And that's not really a good sign. But when you take away the scramble plays, because let's be honest, USC's offensive line, not very good. Caleb was moved off of his spot quite a bit over the last 2 years. If you take those plays away and you just look at the plays where his offensive line actually blocked for him, time to throw is completely normal. It's like 2.61 seconds. Like it's exactly average. And in fact, I think it's a little bit quicker than it is for some of these other quarterbacks operating under those parameters. So look, Caleb's got to get better at working within structure. It can't just be all these outside of the pocket Mahomes-like throws that everybody oohs and ahs about. There's play-by-play consistencies that he needs to get better at, but those are still there within his tape. You just want to see it more often from him.
When you look at these other quarterbacks, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy, Penix, Bo Nix, which of these is more of a finished product now, and which of these has the most upside to develop into something really special that maybe we didn't see coming? I don't want to say Patrick Mahomes-like, but yeah, kind of in that vein where, who saw this coming out of Texas Tech? Who is it you think that has that biggest ceiling where we haven't really seen anything close to their potential reached, possibly?
Yeah, I would say that the two quarterbacks within that group that have the highest ceiling are probably Drake May and J.J. McCarthy, of the guys that you listed, outside of Caleb Williams, because those two players, you can see the areas that they still need to get better, but from the flashes that we've already seen of great arm talent or throws under pressure or throws on third and long, big time throws down the field, zipping it in between coverages over the intermediate middle between the numbers. Like those are the quarterbacks who we have seen continuous throws from them, that they have that in their arsenal. That is something that they can do. It's just that consistency of doing it more often and doing it at a higher level. So I would tell you that those two probably have the biggest ceiling. The two guys in that group that I would say are maybe the most polished or finished products. Jaden Daniels doesn't get talked about enough in that group. And I think his ceiling is a little bit lower than some other people do. I've got him ranked in the 20s on my big board. He's QB3 for me, but he's kind of right there with J.J. McCarthy. But when you look at Jaden Daniels, people talk about the athletic ability, but this is a pocket passer. Like this is somebody who loves to operate within the tackles. And he's got the best throwing mechanics, I think, of any of the quarterbacks in this class. Like from the footwork married all the way up through the throwing motion when the ball is getting out of his hands. Like it is so consistent. It is so repeatable. It is so on point. And that's why the accuracy has been fantastic for him over the last 2 years, but specifically in 2023. So I think Jaden is close to a finished product. I really do. I think that you plop him into the NFL and he can figure things out. Now, reading different defenses and I think specifically attacking over the middle of the field, those are all things that he needs to get better at. But when it comes to just throwing the football, man, he's pretty mechanically sound. And I'd say the same thing about Bo Nix, right? It's going to happen when you've started for over 60 games in your college career. You got a lot of experience to you. So that's something that you hope you're close to a finished product. But he's really showed mastery of that Oregon offense over the last 2 years to where I think the throwing motion is very nice. He knows how to throw off platform. He knows how to throw in structure. He knows how to facilitate that offense. He recognizes things in the pre-snap. He knows where to go post-snap. He keeps things in rhythm. It's on time. And so I think that those two guys are more polished players, whereas I think Drake and JJ, those two guys maybe a little bit more needed when it comes to consistency, but the ceiling is even higher for those two, in my opinion.
Do you think that the semifinal for Michael Penix was the mountaintop for him, or do you like his pro prospects?
Yeah, look, I think that Michael Penix has the ability to be a really good pro, and I don't care about the injury history. I really don't. He's played 2 years of fully healthy college football. When it comes to those major injuries that he went through, you know, the shoulder injuries, the ACL injuries, you know, I think he had like a rib injury that he was playing through towards the end of the season, but that's just football. And the age, again, like, I don't really care about that. You got quarterbacks playing in their mid and late 30s. So, all right, guy comes into the league in his mid 20s. Who cares? You get a decade out of this guy, it's well worth a first round pick anyways. So that age to me doesn't really matter. I just think that it's important to be playing really well the older you are, and Penix has over the last 2 years. The part about Penix that gives me reservation, all the arm talent in the world. I mean, a howitzer of an arm. You get a total gunslinger of a player. Not afraid to push it down the field. Great for a vertical offense, especially ones that are going to be attacking outside the numbers, more towards the sideline. He's very good at that. The issue with me is he's got super long arms and he's got an unorthodox throwing motion. So it's a little bit longer. The windup's a little bit longer. It's just not as, like I said with Jaden Daniels, repeatable. It's just not as repeatable with Michael Penix. There's just more things that can go wrong because his arms are so long. And then you combine that with the fact that, you know, sometimes he'll throw with just his upper body. He won't really put his legs into it. You know, those are things that need to improve at the NFL level because those little things affect maybe not overall accuracy because his accuracy scores are good, but true NFL ball placement. Those are the little inches, if you will, in a game of inches that matter so much. And so for Michael Penix, I think he's got all the talent in the world. I hope he goes to a great offense that allows him to play to his strengths and really push it deep down the field, because if he really just becomes this guy who is even more accurate at the NFL level than he was in college, I mean, we will see one heck of a quarterback who could start for many years in this league. Yeah.
Well, we are just getting started with Trevor on the other side. We still have much more to dig into, including what the Bucs are going to do with the 26th overall pick. Don't go anywhere. The Nod Pod continues right after this.
So with a fairly deep quarterback draft class and with several NFL teams that are possibly shopping for a quarterback, when does the first big move, when's the first big trade happen in the draft here? Is there a team that's kind of going to trade up in your mind to try to get one of these guys?
I think it'll happen at 4. I really do.
The Cardinals?
Yeah, and it depends just how in love with Marvin Harrison Jr. the Cardinals are. I think this draft is going to start quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. We know that Chicago's not going to trade out of 1, and they're not going to not take a quarterback again. We know that Washington can't go any other direction. They're not going to move off at number 2. And I don't think Gerard Mayo says back in January, we're going to pick a very good player at a very important position, wink, wink. I don't think that he does that in January if they're not comfortable with Caleb Williams, Drake May, or Jaden Daniels. And they have the opportunity to pick one of those guys by process of elimination. I think it's going to start with 3 quarterbacks at the top of the draft. And I think if there's going to be a move to be made, it's going to either be at 4 or 5. Because I believe that Monty Ossenfort of the Arizona Cardinals, we saw it last year in his first year as a GM. I mean, he went from number 3 to number 12 and then traded back up from number 12 to number 6, got the player that he would have drafted at number 3 at number 6, and got an extra first-round pick this year for making the maneuver and having the courage to be able to do that. And so you know that he's not afraid to wheel and deal a little bit, right? I mean, you look at the Minnesota Vikings sitting there at number 11. They got 2 first-round picks. Okay, maybe Arizona says, all right, we're going to go from 4 to 11, and then we're going to have picks 11, 23, and 27, remember, in the first round.
Right.
And then we're going to take 11, and we'll take either a second-round pick this year or a second rounder next year or multiple day 2 picks, and we'll pop back up to, I don't know, even the Los Angeles Chargers at number 5. And maybe they can have their cake and eat it too, right? Because if they're trading from number 4, the Vikings aren't going to draft Marvin Harrison Jr. They're going to draft J.J. McCarthy. So then maybe the Cardinals can convince themselves they can get back up to 5 and draft Marvin Harrison Jr. at number 5. So Monty Ossenfort's willingness to trade last year makes me think the Cardinals are the team that's going to trade down. But it depends if the other teams are going to be willing to pay the price that they can meet for how much they really do love Marvin Harrison Jr. But if it's not going to be them, the same scenario can exist for the Chargers, who would love to trade back as well.
In that scenario, I mean, have we ever seen 4 quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4?
No, it would be a first time in NFL history, which says a lot about where we are as a league, right? Yeah. Because think about how important this position has always been. And yet this is the first time it's ever going to start with four quarterbacks going 1, 2, 3, and 4. I think that shows you how desperate teams are for quarterbacks right now. And also how, I'll say it, impatient they are to get one.
Right.
Right. And I just think that all those factors go into this draft potentially starting in a historic way, because these teams are like, no, let's go up and get one now. We got to go up and get one now. We're not waiting until next year. We're not like, oh, you know, too bad. We don't pick high enough to go get one. Screw that. Let's go up and get one, right? I mean, like, that's what I think these teams are thinking. And it's multiple teams, right? We've got more teams who are quarterback desperate than we are quarterbacks to pick from, and it's a really good quarterback class.
Well, yeah, and then it doesn't help that C.J. Stroud had the season he had either.
Well, and exactly, and I think that that's kind of what you go to, right? You look at these situations. I mean, heck, what was it, the 2019 draft? We're 1 year removed from the Cardinals taking a quarterback in the top 10 with Josh Rosen, and the next year they're picking number one overall. They go, nope. Doesn't matter. We're out. We're upgrading.
Yeah.
That team already had a quarterback that they picked in the top 10. And a year later, they upgraded. So that, I think, was just the beginning of the trend that we have seen get more and more towards, I want our guy now. And teams are not afraid to make moves for quarterbacks in ways that we've never seen before in this league.
Well, last block, Trevor, Chris and I were talking about how, you know, Jim Harbaugh is just waking up on the right side of the bed. Everything is kind of just unfolding perfectly for him. And if he ends up with Marvin Harrison Jr. for Herbert to throw to, yeah. Anyway, hey, so I know you are a lifelong Bucks fan, and they're sitting at 26, and I'm looking at your mock, and I see another in-state guy that you have going there. I mean, if Jared Verse ends up in a Bucks uniform, that's got to be a home run, right? I mean, does you think that happens?
It's still a long shot for him to get to 26, but edge rusher is clearly very high on the Bucks' needs at this point, you know? And the issue is that there's a gap. I think there's a really good big three in this class. You know, Dallas Turner from Alabama, Laiatu Latu from UCLA, and Jared Verse from Florida State. I think the Bucks would be elated with any of those three. I feel like their power ranking would probably be Latu, then Verse, then Turner. But I think that they would be absolutely stoked if any of those three made it to 26. The issue is that if all three are off the board, which I kind of think they're going to be, there's sort of a gap that I don't know if they'd be comfortable just pushing an edge rusher at that spot, but they really need one. So Jason Light doesn't really trade up very often, right? I mean, the only trade up that we have is Tristan Wirfs, you know, trade in the first round, Tristan Wirfs, and they move up one pick and they're able to go get him. But I do think that if say one of these guys is available at, I don't know, 22, 23, I think Tampa does pick up the phone. And I think Jason Light says, okay, what do you want to move up? How much is it going to cost? Because if it won't cost too much, they still really need to get a nice edge rusher. And I think they'd love to leave the first round with one of those top edge rushers in this class. But yeah, I have Verse falling to them because I obviously created a reality where it was able to be so. But I think the more plausible case is that all three guys are going to be off the board at that point. And that's when you get into a big conversation of, okay, what does Tampa do now?
We like living in your fictional world.
Yes.
That would be that'd be a good place for Bucks fans, for sure.
In a dreamsicle, creamsicle world.
Wow, there we go.
Characterize this whole draft class for me here, because Scott was asking me earlier, hey, do you think this is a good draft class? And I said, why are you asking me? We're going to have Trevor Sikkema on later. But I'm not sure that's verbatim. That's basically how it went. Yeah, but now I do believe that it is a deep class and talent rich. And what positions do you see where there are some teams that are going to make some hay in later rounds in certain positions?
Yeah, I think that it is a good draft class. I really do. You know, especially at the premium position. Quarterback, wide receiver, edge rusher, offensive tackle, lockdown corner. I mean, those are like the five most important positions in the game. Not to discredit those other positions, but just individually what they can do. I just feel as though this class is very stacked in all of those categories. And I would say that when it comes to depth, wide receivers incredibly deep this class. I know we kind of say that every year. We really mean it this year. I mean, you're going to get guys that are going to get picked in the third and fourth round that are going to be starters for NFL teams. They really are. I think that that's where we're going with this wide receiver class and how talented it is. I think this is a good offensive tackle class. I also think it's a deep offensive tackle class, but all that to say, teams pick offensive tackles early. So even though I think there's 10 offensive tackles that are pretty dang good in this class, they could all be gone by middle of the second round just because you don't let offensive tackles really go far down the draft. It's just not the name of the game of football. And then I think corner. I think there's a lot of really good corners in this class, even getting into the third round. Like second and third round, you're going to see a lot of, again, future starters get picked from this group of draft prospects. So I'd say wide receiver, offensive tackle, and cornerback are the three groups where we've got the deepest amount of talent. You'll get some starters somewhere on day two, maybe even day three.
You want to know why I know I could never be a good GM? Because if I'm the Bucs and I'm sitting there at 26 and I see Iowa State's TJ Tampa, I don't care. I'm reaching. I gotta have that guy. I gotta have it for the name alone. Is there a chance that TJ Tampa ends up in Tampa?
I mean, I think there is a chance. By the way, he played high school football in St. Pete. I don't know.
Oh,
if
really?
You guys?
I didn't even know that.
if you guys knew that, yes, yeah, he played his high school football, I believe, in St. Pete. So, look, he is a bigger, longer corner. But he is also sort of an off-coverage cover three type of a corner. Like, he can play press man for you, but he's more comfortable, like, giving you a little bit of space, you know, allowing the quarterback to kind of think they can make completions, allowing himself to just always be able to trigger downhill. I think that's what he does best. You know, he's not as physical in run support as you would want from a bigger corner, but super long arms. Like, I just think he's got good instincts in cover three. He is a really good football player, and he feels like a Todd Bowles type of a corner. With how he plays defense and how he likes those quarters, cover three, cover chills. And so he is somebody who, last name aside, like I think he would be a good fit in Tampa Bay.
There we go. You don't have to convolute some Tampa Bay or anything like that. It's already
that's what
there.
It is. And then play a Tampa 2 defense.
No doubt.
What is your favorite name in this NFL draft class? There's always a couple of good ones. You had Latu earlier, but there's always a few that you have to practice, I'm sure, before you jump on these podcast and spit them out.
Oh my goodness. There's, I mean, when you talk about like tongue twisters in this class, Talise Fuanga from Oregon State.
Okay.
Troy Faltanu, Oluwatimi Fushanu, Fashanu.
Yeah,
you know, like
one.
That's a tough one.
He's a great
Kingsley
player too.
Suomatia.
Oh. Okay.
He from BYU. That's a tough one. From Clemson, Rook Arororo. Like that is his last name.
That sounded
name.
Like something Scooby Doo. Yeah, Scooby Doo would say.
So there are a lot of fantastic names, and by fantastic I mean very difficult for me to try to pronounce correctly, because I try to make sure I get the respect that I can for these guys because they deserve it. But it's put me in a little bit of a bind, but hopefully I've said it enough times now at this point in the process.
Well, we have kept you so long that I believe the Bears are actually on the clock. So with that being said, Trevor, thank you so much for your time.
He's
the lead draft analyst at PFF. Check him out. Trevor Sikkema, Tampa Bay native. Thank you so much, Trevor.
Thanks, Trevor. Happy
Appreciate
draft.
It,
Appreciate it, guys. Anytime.
Have a great draft night. There he is. Good stuff. So I feel like we've taken a big bite out of the draft. We're full, but you still have to leave a little room in that belly.
Still hungry, baby.
Coming up on the other side, it is your champion's meal. That's right. You are, by virtue of Scotty Scheffler's win, you are our Masters champ.
Am I eating high on the hog? That's all I want to know.
You will, indeed. That plate will be served on the other side. Welcome back to the No Off Days podcast. As you can see, we have more food on the table. Every segment, just more food on the table. We'll get to that in a moment. We want to look back to last week and the Masters, of course. We've been talking about it. We started the show talking about how Scottie Scheffler won yet his second green jacket. But we had our Masters draft last week, and between you, myself, and BK, we each selected four golfers. So three favorites and then a dark horse. And we said if one of our guys ends up winning this thing, then we get to select the menu for the champion's meal, which is, of course, a Masters tradition for the actual players that win it. So let's recap the results of the guys that we picked. Let's go to the leaderboard. So Brian King, his first pick was Justin Thomas, missed the cut. Joaquin Niemann finished tied for 22nd at four over par. Akshay Bhatia, a promising young golfer, but maybe not his best out there at Augusta National, finishes at six over. And then Nick Dunlap, he picked him simply because he went to Alabama. Hey, both the Alabama guys missed the cut. That's a shame. All right, myself, I went with Xander Schauffele foolishly out of the gates as my number one pick. He finished at plus one. I thought he was gaining some steam there at some point, but just Will Zalatoris, you predicted it. It would be a huge disappointment at the end, and, well, he lived up to the billing. And then Wyndham Clark missed the cut, surprisingly. He kind of tanked on Friday, and then Steven Yeager missing the cut as well. So that brings us to our winner, Chris Cato, and Scotty Scheffler winning by four strokes at 11 under par. Not great the rest of the way. Good thing that we left you, Scheffler. Hideki Matsuyama finishes seven over par. Jordan Spieth misses the cut, and your dark horse, JT Poston, at plus five.
How about that? My dark horse. The only one of our dark horses to miss the cut.
That's true. So I guess you should get double credit for that. But I will say, it doesn't really matter what the rest of them are because you just needed to pick one. And even if you finished second, you wouldn't have gotten this delicious meal that we have prepared for you. But Brian and I stayed up all night. We slaved away to prepare what was on your menu. And so here you go. You requested a Duroc pork chop. My friend, this is a Duroc pork, but I think you wanted some apple.
I wanted some apple chutney or apple glaze on it.
Oh, I'm sorry, you don't have that.
No, I'm happy to see this. Did you? Where did you get this chop?
I bought it at
did
a place that sells
the hog
meat.
Yourself?
Yes, it was high on the hog, right?
Yeah,
that's where I cut that thing. Yeah, I just wounded the animal though. I cooked that myself actually, and then the other stuff we picked up at a local establishment that will remain nameless.
People are gonna wonder why Chris had KFC on his champions dinner. But no, this is you went out of your way. Just the fact that you cooked this pork chop.
You had fried chicken on there. You had the things we didn't get: Brussels sprouts, cornbread. And then green beans, we didn't. But we got mac and cheese, mashed potatoes, chicken. We got you a slice of carrot cake, which was
more
also
cake.
On there.
Look, folks, more cake.
And we tried to get in touch with Cookie to have her send us a schlopping of strawberry pretzel salad, but she was busy.
Screening her balls wisely.
She said, "What is the No Off Days podcast?" I said, you should talk to your son every once in a while.
You know what? I got her to send me the recipe for the strawberry pretzel salad, so we'll try that sometime. But this is too much.
Dig in and enjoy. Brian, we should bring you in right here as well because you took part in preparing this meal for Chris. So as we just kind of stare at him as he eats.
I'm going in on this pork chop first.
What are your thoughts on, let me know how that goes down.
You bake this yourself.
Brian, I know that you had hoped that barbecue would be on the menu this week.
I know. I'm kind of disappointed. My mouth was all excited and watering last week thinking, man, tonight.
This is a
barbecue.
Thick pork chop. Sorry, Brian.
But is it good? I don't know.
He's wrestling with his fork and knife now. But.
I like to eat slowly. No, okay, here we go.
Don't smack.
Okay. All right.
Wow. It's good. Well, it's juicy.
All right. Does pork have to be cooked all the way through?
No, this is what do you season this with? That's good.
I made up my own seasoning. Yeah.
You're not going to tell me what's in it.
The seasoning is like it's like brown sugar and paprika and chili pepper.
It's really good. It's really good. This is a good chop. You know, the hardest thing about when I cook pork chops is just drying them out. And this is not dry.
Well, we cooked it with a thermometer in there, so we made sure that it once it got to 155, I yanked that puppy out of the oven.
I don't know if you guys can see this at home, but look at this.
There we go.
Look at this nice chop. Look at this tender cut of meat. I mean, not dry at all.
All right.
Look at that. You did well. Look at that, guys. Doesn't that look good? Now you're saying to yourself, Chris, why would you put a pork chop on your master's dinner? But a perfectly cooked pork chop? I've had filet mignon, but a perfectly cooked pork chop is hard to beat.
Yeah.
I agree.
It really is.
Brian, do you resent Chris more now that he's eating in front of us?
No, but I just next year we got just a top seed, the top guy overall cannot be picked. So it's everybody but the number one
ranked
guy.
Well, see, now I don't know about that because how often does the odds-on favorite end up winning the Masters?
Or we should have a staggered scoring system or something. I don't know.
I want to remind you guys.
You think team score? I think he still would have won with team score, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we only had two guys.
I didn't have two
miscuts.
Yeah.
But
no,
as I swallow this up.
Heimlich! Ron, get in here!
I ate the bone. No, I want to remind our listeners, though, that we drafted, and you guys, I picked third.
You did.
You did. You guys passed up Scottie Scheffler.
You had the first overall, Brian, and you took Justin Thomas.
I know.
And look, Scott
that's
got me up.
That's why you don't pick with your heart. You got to pick with your head, and you did that. Kudos to you.
Scott got me a Four Loco to drink, too, with my meal. No,
it's Arnold Palmer.
Brian picked that up.
Yeah.
Good. I'm going to need it.
This was teamwork.
Ah, how's that sound?
Yeah. The Smith family's not eating tonight, but you're eating like a king. So.
Well, you know what? I might share. Yeah. I got the chicken, too. This is great.
Okay.
Thank you. It pays to pick Scheffler.
Boy, no kidding.
Yeah. He's putting food on the table for sure. That's quite the show. And I don't know how else to end this other than, maybe a bite of that carrot cake.
Yeah, I might let you guys have a little. You are much nicer.
If
either of you had won, let's see, Brian had barbecue. I probably could have gotten Brian some pulled pork, but if you had won.
A New York strip.
Yeah. I don't know if I could have done that.
Yeah. What would you have done?
Giving you a cheeseburger.
Do they sell New York strips at Wawa?
You know what I mean? You had that awful cream spinach on your menu. That's the only thing I would have given you was the cream spinach.
Well, I appreciate that.
No, you're a better man than I am.
That is 100% accurate. Mm-hmm. All right.
Congrats, Cato. Enjoy.
Congratulations. Enjoy the food.
You're the best.
No green jacket for you, but he's got a green Pearl Jam shirt, so that'll have to get the job done. Much thanks to our guest, Trevor Sikkema, for joining us on the show and getting us ready for draft, which is coming up on April 25th. Much thanks to Ron, who baked a delicious tasting cake. That would be the kitty litter cake. We got Sean on the floor over here. We got Chris on the ones and twos. We got Brian in the booth. For Chris, I'm Scott. Remember, until the next time we are on, there are no off days.
When does the food poisoning kick in?
You must be getting sleepy right now.